Welcome to the Course Creator Community Podcast. Your host, Mr. Jono Petrohilos, currently generates over $1 million a year selling his online courses. And now he teaches you how to do the same. Along with listening to our podcast, make sure to join the Course Creator Community Facebook group. It's one of the largest and most engaged Facebook groups in the space. You'll find the link in the show notes. Anyway, let's get to today's show.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Course Creator Community Podcast. I'm your host, Jono, and I am super excited because we have an absolute rock star on the line this week. Now, I know I say that about every guest every week, but this person actually is a rock star, and he's got the statistics to back it up. I had him on this show it was about a year ago or something like that. And what I do with my podcast is I go back on old guests, and I'm like, all right, who did I have on a year ago? If they were a bad guest, they get scrapped from the list and they're never on again. If they were a good guest, I go and hit them up and I'm like, hey, it's been a year, let's go on again. So this guy was on a year ago. A little bit about this person. He runs a very successful online course business himself, Piano in 21 Days. So if you want to learn the piano, go and check him out and you'll have the best course there. On top of that, he also runs a very popular podcast, The Online Course Show. I recommend everybody listening to this podcast to go on there and check it out. Actually, I'll introduce him and then we'll speak a bit about the podcast. So without further ado, it's the one and only Mr. Jax Hopkins. Jax, how are you?
What's up, Jono? Thanks for the intro, man. It's always fun to do podcasts, whether I'm hosting it or it's a lot easier when I'm not the host because all the pressure is really on you as the podcast host.
Thanks,
but
man.
It's a real treat to like be invited as a repeat guest because that means I didn't totally blow it the last time. So I appreciate it. Good to talk to you.
No, you're good. And expect a DM in about a year's time as well. And if you don't get that, you probably blew this one, you know?
I'm going to set a Siri reminder after we get off.
Now, let's spend a minute speaking about your podcast, Jax, because I think for anyone listening to this podcast, I think it's the best podcast in the world for online course creators at the stage where, you know, you start, well, any stage really, but for most people listening to this are starting up their online course. They've maybe, you know, been in business 6 months, maybe a year, maybe a couple years. I recommend Jark's podcast over anything. I use it as kind of like inspiration to my podcast. I'm like, man, he's doing that. That's such a good idea. And I think he was actually the inspiration to start mine. I was doing some research. I'm like, oh, this guy's got a good one. But what I like about Jark's podcast, and then I'll shut up and let him talk. But what I like about Jark's podcast is in terms of like the online business, online course space, there's some really big podcasts, which are awesome. You know, the Pat Flynn's, the Amy Porterfield's, I listen to them. I'm sure Jax listens to them as well. The one downfall with those is sometimes those people are so big. Like I saw one of Amy Porterfield's posts the other week or the other month where she did like a $4 million month. And I'm like, okay, that's great. But you know, it might be pitched a little bit high for someone that's just starting off. On top of that, there's a lot of podcasts helping course creators, which are also good and really good content. But a lot of them are kind of like solo podcasts where it's just the host really trying to sell their program, which is fine. Nothing wrong with selling. You know, I like selling. I like money. But it's them trying to sell their program. And a lot of their research is based on their experience as an online course consultant, not so much as something completely different like Jax does in 21 days. So anyway, I'll put the link in the show notes. Go and check that out. It's The Online Course Show. Did you want to expand on that at all, Jax?
Well, those are very generous words about the podcast, Jono. Yeah, I mean, I started my podcast in 2017. So we're going on over 5 years now for The Online Course Show. And I started it just because the thought of a podcast like that really excited me. And I had no monetization strategy, no long-term plans other than it sounded fun. And also it was, I was hoping it'd be an outlet to meet other course creators all over the world. Yeah. And it certainly turned into that. And I think what you said about, you know, people like Amy Porterfield, I mean, I love Amy Porterfield. Like I follow her stuff, but how unrelatable is she? Like she's like one of the top dogs in the industry, but also she's just like always like so perfect on camera. Like she doesn't have a single hair out of place. It's like, come on, like there's, you can't, are you a robot? Like, and so I try to be just like, you know, nothing against the Amy Porterfields
of
the
world. Amazing. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. But yeah, we keep it a little more low key and casual on the online course show. I think one of our most popular episodes, people keep bringing it up, even though it's about 4 months old now. We had a guy on about 4 months ago. His name is Spencer. And I know you have like just regular, really down to earth people on your podcast as well. But we had this guy on, Spencer, who he only got into courses about a year ago, and he teaches toddlers how to read, or he empowers the parent of the toddler to get them reading at like 2, 3, worst case, like 4 years old, like super young. And he's got a $200 course, and he has just blown up, and he's making like $40K a month selling a $200 course, teaching toddlers to read with one traffic source, Instagram. Like that, he's just mastered Instagram. He's got a killer funnel. He's got a killer course teaching toddlers to read, like absolutely not in the money-making space. And just his story and just like how bad he wanted it and his motivation was just really resonated with people. And that's been an all-time favorite of listeners. And that's the type of story I love featuring on my podcast.
Yeah, 100%. Same over here as well. Well, hey, Jux, we didn't really have a plan for today. This was my hope that we talk about. So for the listeners, Jux was on about a year ago. I'll put the link in the show notes for the previous one. And he shared his story basically from zero to about, I think he's doing about $1 million a year last time we chatted about a year and a half ago. So if you want to hear that story about zero to a million, you know, that's great. Go and check that out. What I was hoping to do is chat to Jux today about what's been happening in the last couple of years. Like, you know, has the business grown? Has it plateaued? Has it slowed down? What was working 2 years ago that just doesn't work now? What's changed in that space? And also now Jux does some consulting and courses for course creators as well. So, you know, we can speak about that and balancing those two. So I'm just going to hand it over to you, Jux, and start where you want to start. And yeah, let's start there. And I know also I'm also just going to mention to the listeners as well, like Jux mentioned Spencer was a good guest for his show. I'd say Jux is the perfect one for this show here. Like, he's really good at what he does in terms of his own course and also teaches course creators as well. There's very few people in the world that do both. So tune in for this episode. But sorry, continue on, Jux. So yeah, last couple of years, what's been happening?
Thanks, Jono. Yeah, I definitely want to focus more on Piano in 21 Days because, like we've talked about so far, like that's a much more relatable business model. This is an online course business that I help people learn piano in a fast and fun way without cheap music, without the traditional way to learn piano. We've had over 8,000 students. We brought in over $3 million. I started that in 2013. You are right. We have done over, $100,000 months before. We're not there right now. We are having our worst year since 2019, that's not a bad thing because COVID was insane for our business and it was insane for a lot of online course businesses. And so the peak month, like May of 2020, that's when like COVID was around, right? 2020 is the year. I lose track. We brought in like 145K in 1 month, and that's just wild. But what happened is just, you know, everybody's home and they're like, okay, what can I do with my time indoors at home? What have I always, and so many people have pianos sitting around. So it was right niche, right time, but I also had the right funnel in place. I had the right traffic sources in place. My SEO was dialed in. So everything just really came together, but it wasn't just me. A lot of hobby type niches, you know, not to get off piano so quickly, but even there's a lot of people who just started online course businesses around that time because they could do that from the comfort of their own home. And so things have definitely come back down to earth, and we're bringing in like 30 to 40K a month, which, I mean, that's, I would say, not bad, especially once again, in a non-money making niche.
Yeah.
But we have things so much more dialed in than a couple of years ago. We've really focused on like systems and automation. We have a really good team of six people. So I'm not involved in the day to day anymore. I'm the CEO and I've got really awesome people on my team that help me run it. And we've got systems, automation. We have, you know, SOPs in place, really just trying to get a really dialed in online course business that just runs like a machine. Whether it's bringing in, you know, 10K, 30K, 140K a month, whatever the market tells us. And the market is just not near as high. And even our conversion rates of the exact same funnel are not as high because people just aren't as interested today in sitting home and learning his musical instrument as they were 2 years ago. And I think that's fair.
Yeah, 100%. Now, I just want to take a minute and let everyone know, if you're a course creator, you've already got a course and it's not quite selling, or if you're still in the process of putting your course together, at the Course Creator Community, we actually have a VIP group coaching program. It's the best program of its kind and the most affordable as well. So if you'd like some extra help and guidance in either putting your course together or selling your online course, I recommend joining the Course Creator Community VIP program. I'll put the links down in the show notes. Okay, well, let's dive into some of that. Like even the 2020, like that was the peak time. Similar with my business as well. And I think,
yeah,
hit it up. I'll go even one deeper, Jax. So my fitness education online business is helping fitness trainers, right? Whether it's business-wise or be better trainers. One of my courses was how to start training clients online. Already had it. Right before COVID, already had it. We'd sell one or two of those a month, you know. The month of COVID, we sold like 80 of them, right? Like an 80 times extra. And I think similar to what you said, you already had everything in place, right? And it's that old saying, like, you can get lucky, but it's kind of like your preparation determines the luck. You know, it's like the reason you were so successful there, you did the preparation, then the opportunity came and it took off. So, okay, well, let's even go back to 2 years ago. So you've got a team of six now, you're off the day to day. What was it 2 years ago? Was it you doing everything? Did you have a couple team members? What did it look like then?
Yeah, I had a couple team members. So several of our team members have been around for a while. Some, there's one or two that were part-time then that are more full-time now. So we had our same exact video editor. That's a really important role to have in an online course business, whether it's full-time or part-time, right? That's one of the misconceptions that I had when I was getting started. I was like, I can't hire somebody. Like, I can't, you expect me to have a full-time person working for me? I don't have that much work. Well, I've had the same guy doing 10 hours a week of video editing for me for years now. And he's awesome. He's in Romania. And I mean, he's great. And so he was around. I had my like jack of all trades assistant. She's her title today is marketing coordinator, but she does a lot of our customer service, but then also a lot of our blog posts and social media posts and things like that. She was around then. I think that's
10 hours a week full-time then.
She's about 20 to 30 hours a week. And she doesn't like that. She's a mom of two young kids. Like that's all she wants. She doesn't have other clients or anything. And she's been with me for like 6 years now. But then now we have a full-time student success manager. And that's one of the key roles that has allowed me to really step out of the business as much as I have, is because I look at the different components of the business. We have the fulfillment side, which is like how we handle students once they're in the inside. And what we have is not just a passive course, Jono. I don't know the way you run your courses, but like this one in particular, we do a weekly Q&A to answer piano questions. We allow them to email us anytime. We even throw in a couple of like one-on-one lessons as a bonus. And there's a community. And so that's a lot for the business owner to run all of that, especially when you get a lot of volume of new students. So I looked at all the components, you know, fulfillment, marketing, sales, operations. And I'm like, man, I think this fulfillment piece is like the most important part. Like once people sign up, let's make sure they're successful. And so I put a person in charge of the whole thing. And that's gone really well to do that. And so we have a student success manager now full time. I've got a part-time graphic designer, and then we've got an operations, a full-time operations manager too.
Gotcha. Tell me about that hiring experience, Jax. At what point? So it sounds like you had the video editor all along. You had your original assistant, kind of jack of all trades assistant, which sounds like it was a PA or a VA kind of thing. What was the first hire after that?
Let's take a quick break.
If you want tips and strategies on how to start, grow, and monetize your business online, check out the Digital Revolution podcast with Eli Adams. We interview digital experts from around the world that share their personal stories. They talk about what they're currently working on and where they see the future going. But most importantly, they share tactics in their specific area of expertise with the hope of helping you improve your digital presence online. You can listen to the Digital Revolution podcast on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio, or simply click on the link in the show notes below.
Probably the student success manager. And look, we got really lucky with her, because this is crazy. You're not going to get this very often. She was our babysitter.
No,
she was our babysitter. Listen to this. So she starts babysitting for us. We live in a town that's got a big university, so there's a lot of college kids. And so, you know, we put some feelers out there. We got connected with this girl at the university. She started coming around. She was great with the kids. It was fun to be around. And it turns out she would come and she would grab my guitar or piano and she would play with the kids while we were, you know, on date night and whatnot. And she's a very skilled musician. Like she doesn't go around gigging or anything. She just always loved music and always been extremely talented with music. So one summer a few years ago, I was like, hey, do you want like an internship? She was in kinesiology. Like you could relate to that.
Yeah.
But it was just like, it was just something to do. Like she didn't love it. She loved music. And I was like, you know, piano in 21 days, you know, come intern for me, come check it out. And she loved it. She did a great job. And then she started doing just little part-time things here and there. Nothing too crazy, right? Just like virtual assistant type stuff. And then when she graduated college, I was like, hey, look, I've got this vision for this role of student success manager. I think you'd be great for it. And this was about a year ago now, a little over a year ago. And she was all for it. She loved the idea. So she's got her, kinesiology degree, but she's the student success manager for Piano in 21 Days. She does great. And she like, that's her role is like, hey, help make these people as successful as possible. So we do a weekly Q&A. I still do it once a month. So 3 out of 4 times she does the weekly Q&A. I do it once a month. She responds to all the incoming support emails. She does the one-on-one lessons when that happens. She's like, I've got her tasked with like, hey, let's get as many like video testimonials as possible. If you see that somebody has gotten, you know, 2/3 of the way through the course and seem to have stalled, like proactively reach out to them, see what they're doing, see how we can help them get through the whole program. So that's how the babysitter turned into the full-time student success manager.
Love it. I'll give my take on that. If someone's listening and they're like, so what's the strategy? Just hire a babysitter and hope that she does my course. What I've found works really well in that kind of role there is if you've got like an all-star student. So everyone that I've hired in that kind of position has been someone that's been through the course and got like amazing results and loved it. I find that's for a lot of the listeners there, if you're at that kind of stage there, I find that's a really good person to hire there because they've done the course. They love the course. They've done they're incorporated in your brand. They like the brand. They're skilled at what it is you do. So I think that's an option for the listeners there. Couple questions with that, Jack. So internship, was that a paid internship, free internship? Am I allowed to ask that internship?
It was paid. Yeah, it was paid. I think I paid her the same rate that we paid her for babysitting. You know, She was already babysitting. So it's like, hey, you want to make the same amount of money, but come work on the piano business. We'll pay you the same. And look, if I could just really quickly add to what you just said about hiring from your audience, I 100% agree, Jono.
Yeah.
And that's, we had great success hiring our operations manager that way.
Yeah.
Because we did hire an operations manager through a more generic route shortly after the student success manager. We went to like onlinebusinessmanager.com. Like we got a certified OBM and she was okay. You know, she had, you know, there were pros and cons, but she didn't play piano. You know, she wasn't passionate about our core values and what we were trying to do. And that just didn't work out long-term. But when we went to rehire that position, we reached out to our student pool.
Yeah.
And we have found, and he's been with us for like 5 or so months now, and he's been a total rock star. But he gets it. He gets what we're trying to do because he's the ideal student,
you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, he gets what the people in that situation want, you know?
Yes. Yes. It's a great way to go.
Yeah. 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 For sure. Okay. So internship. Yeah. I like that as well. That's how I do most of my hires as well, a paid internship. I learned that from, do you know Billy Jean? You know who he is, Josh?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So sure. I was in San Diego for, I think, a conference, Traffic and Conversions or Social Media World. And he just made a post on his Instagram. And I was like, hey, you know, I'm doing a paid internship. You know, if you're interested, just come to my office at 8 a.m. tomorrow. And it was actually really fun. I just happened to be in San Diego for a holiday. I was like, man, this guy's doing a paid internship. I just want to go there and, you know, meet people and hang out and whatever. And it was like, it was really cool, actually. I'll tell you, I'd see a couple of stories from it. So all he said was just come to my office at 8 a.m. That's it, right? And there were like a couple people that were late. Not super late, like, you know, 5-10 minutes late or whatever. And he didn't let him in at the start. And then he's like, all right, guys, you know, I'm going to let you in now. You four people have to come up the front. He goes, one thing with me is like, you know, I'm big on time and I'm big on accountability. So tell me the excuse why you're late. And if I like it, I'll let you stay. If not, see you later, bye, you're out. So went to like, you know, the first three people and they're like, you know, I couldn't find parking, you know, you know, the bus was late or whatever. You know, he's like, bye, 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 bye. Got to the last guy. And the last guy was like, all right, so the reason I'm late is I'm from New York. We're in California, right? He's like, I'm from New York. As soon as I saw that message, I quit my job and I booked a flight to California because I knew I wanted to be here. And then I got in my Uber at, you know, New York, and the Uber driver didn't know the way to the airport. So because of that, you know, we missed the flight. Then I had to get the next flight. And that's why I'm, you know, 30 minutes late or whatever it is. Do you think you let him off, Jax? Yes or no?
I'm guessing you kept him around.
No, he didn't. And here's the reason why. He's like, look, I get it. But the biggest value for my company is personal responsibility and accountability. When you told that story, you blamed the Uber driver. If you had told that story a little bit differently and said, you know, look, I didn't know the way to the airport. I should have looked. I didn't. My mistake. I would have let you stay. But because you're blaming the Uber driver, you're out. So it was harsh, but I kind of agree with it. And I think that's a good message of like, whether you agree with that or not, I think is kind of irrelevant. I think what matters is what do your values sit on that? You know, like if there's people listening to that and they're like, yeah, for sure, I wouldn't let that person in. Great. You know, that's kind of the values of your business. On the flip side, if someone's like, man, I can't believe he did that. What an asshole. I would have definitely let that person stay. Totally cool as well. But then Billy Jean probably isn't the type of guy that would, you know, fit in that business there. So I think that's a good little story. Any thoughts on that?
Well, that, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind from that story would be not something about hiring, but about running a successful online course business in general, because I was listening to somebody I know a couple weeks ago who has a course business. He's doing like, doing okay. He's got making like $1,000 a month, but he wants to be making 10, 20, 30 times that. Mm. And he's like, Jacques, I just don't understand. Like I've got the course, you know, I'm running the business and I see all these other people are running successful course businesses and it just seems so easy, but it's just not working for me. And it's so frustrating that it's not working for me. And what he did, like, he's not taking responsibility for the fact that he hasn't put together a good offer. He has no funnel, right? He's not consistent with his content creation or anything like that, right? He's just like blaming the universe for why he's doing so much more poorly than these other people. And that's like, it's so frustrating to hear from my side, because it's like, bro, take a step back. You're not doing everything perfectly. How about you put in some work and then you might see some results?
Yeah, love that. There's an old saying in the fitness space, which is like, you can either have excuses or you can have results, but you can't have both. Pick one or the other. You know, and the way it's funny, like when I speak to personal trainers, right? And I'm like, all right, you know, what's run me through your business, what's going on? They're like, oh, it's not going as well as I can, but it's not my fault, you know. It's kind of like a new gym opened up down the road and, you know, they're 24 hours and like now it's bad weather and no one wants to train outside, and you know, now the new government's in and they've brought in some restrictions, and you know, they're essentially blaming everybody else but themselves. And that's a little thing that I can pick up when I speak to these trainers. I'm like, if someone comes to me like that, they're like, the reason why my business isn't growing is because of, and comes up with all these external factors. I'm pretty confident they're never going to be, even if they do my course, they're never going to be successful until they change that mindset. on the flip side, if someone comes into it, they're like, yeah, my business isn't growing as much as I wanted it to. It's because I don't know sales enough. I got to go and learn sales, or, you know, I'm not marketing enough. I got to go and learn marketing, or, you know, my offer's not strong enough. If they take responsibility for it, then it's an easy fix. It's like, yeah, easy. Just go and watch this model and problem solve. So love that. But I want to get back to the hiring jocks. So are you allowed to speak figures, roughly how much you're paying, let's say, the fulfillment student success officer?
I'm usually incredibly transparent, but let's stay away from something like that.
Yeah, it's okay. Because I think I can ask the question anyway in a different kind of way. Was it hard? Because I'm guessing it would have been a decent chunk of you know, kind of your profit. Was it hard to make that decision to be like, ooh, I've been running this much without this person here. Now I'm going to have to give this person X amount. Was that hard? Was it easy? What can you tell us about that decision?
Yeah, great question. In this particular case, because we had ratcheted up slowly, you know, she started as an intern and then she's doing some part-time while she's in school. We slowly ratcheted it up. I knew I had an A player. Yeah. And that's the key when you're hiring and you have a team, is A players are amazing and they free up your time and they help serve your business so much better. But there's not much worse than like hiring and having somebody on your team that's not an A player. Mm-hmm. And it's the opposite of that. And so when it is an A player, it's easy to justify the cost. I mean, I guess there's certainly limits there, but I would much rather figure out ways I can spend less on software or other things within the business and pay A players.
Yep. Gotcha. Do you have like ratios or budgets or anything, Jax? Is it kind of like, all right, I'm making X amount of revenue here. I'm going to keep X amount for myself. I'm going to put X amount into marketing, X amount into general expenses, anything like that?
Not specifically like what you're talking about. What we do is we run profit first.
Yep.
Right. Are you familiar with the profit first system? So
maybe just give a bit of an overview in case the listeners haven't heard of it.
Sure. It's a wildly popular book by Mike Michalowicz, came out years ago. And before I read that, like I didn't know what to do with the money and budgeting for business and all that, man. I just ran everything out of one bank account. Yep. And when there was thousands of dollars in there, I was like, man, let's spend some money. Yeah. when there's almost nothing in there, I'm like, man, what is happening? Like business sucks right now. We gotta figure something out. And that's a horrible way to run a business, is by just looking at one bank account. So the idea behind profit first is that you have multiple bank accounts, and one of which is revenue. And so all dollars in go into one bank account. And then you just have a predefined percentage that you then distribute the revenue into these other bank accounts like a couple times a month, right? So taxes, right? That's a great one to set money aside for all your expenses, your operating expenses, and, you know, salary for yourself. And so on. So really, I mean, the book describes like some key default accounts to set up, but then you can take that and decide, you know, what kind of accounts make the most sense for your business and what percentage allocation do you want to put for those? And then like you just, if you don't have that money, you can't spend it. So like, I know how much money we need to spend on our people and our software. And then I know how much I want to make and so on. And then the other key account I didn't mention is profit, right? It's called profit first. And so it's nice to watch that profit account grow as well. So that's the system that we run, is profit first.
Love it. I run something similar. I'll share the way I do it, Jack. So I use that as like a base. I was like, oh man, I like this idea. I was the same as you. I was kind of like, a lot of money in here. Yeah, I probably should withdraw some, you know, and I had no kind of system in that. I use, I've got the revenue bank account. All the money goes into there. I then divvy it up three ways. I use a 40, 45, 15. So 45 of that is essentially income. I say, all right, whatever revenue I make, I'm keeping 45% for myself. 40% expenses, right? Goes into the expense one over there. And then 15% taxes. And this is off revenue. If some people are thinking, you only pay 50% tax, this is off revenue, right?
Not off revenue.
Yeah. And the reason why I love that system is if you have a bad month, you don't quite feel it as much. You just take a little bit less of everywhere. You know, like previously, if I had a bad month, I was like, oh man, what am I going to do? I don't have any money to spend. I've got to do these expenses. You know, the advantage of the profit first is like, even say it goes from half, say you go from 100, as you know, you mentioned your situation there, you go from 100,000 a month to 50,000 a month. Sounds huge, right? And okay, maybe it's a decent drop. But if you look at that, it's just like, okay, cool. All right, I make a little bit less, but I spend a little bit less on taxes, and then I'm a bit tighter with my expenses. You just don't quite feel it as much. So I love that there. What about, so I guess a couple questions from there. It sounds like that was like a slowly building role. It's like you brought her in as an intern or babysitter to internship. Okay, a few more hours, a few more hours, a few more hours. In terms of any of the other roles, maybe the operations manager. Oh, actually, no, let's spend a minute still on the student success. Once you brought your student success manager in full time, were you pretty much done with the fulfillment and admin side of things? Apart from obviously the little bit that you do, were you pretty much off that and you were 100% on the sales and marketing?
Well, it wasn't straight away, right? Because there's training, there's transition involved. So she's been in that role full-time for a little over a year now. And so at this point, I'm almost completely out of fulfillment. So I'm not really involved in the community. There's no emails to reply to, anything like that. I do the Q&A once a month just to show face. Like, this is the guy that you've been watching in the videos. Hi, here I am. And to keep a pulse on it as well, you know, just to do kind of those two main things. So I see still doing that on a monthly basis for a while. I say that like for a long time, it was me doing it every week. Yeah. And then I slowly went to every 2 weeks and now I'm at a month. So, I mean, it could change, but that's the main thing I'm doing on the fulfillment side, other than also just like trying to keep on top of, are the programs we have inside the best? Like, do we need to make any updates? Do we need to make any additions and things like that? Just key high level decisions as the CEO. And then as far as the other pieces go, I'm mostly the one on camera. Now the student success manager, she's been on some YouTube videos, which is cool. And those were well received. So it's good to not be the only one that has to be on camera. But we've got a pretty good system for developing like scripts for YouTube videos and the whole process there. So my involvement is pretty minimal other than being on camera. Yeah. And then beyond that, we have a weekly team meeting. And that's kind of the extent of what I do now for Piano in 21 Days.
The sales and marketing side of things? Who's
Yeah, sales is taken care of by an evergreen funnel, right? Yeah, so that's automated.
Yep.
Nothing to do with sales. And then our main marketing channel for Piano in 21 Days is YouTube. And that's what I was just talking about.
Gotcha. So you'll still do the content at the moment for the YouTube, or most of it anyway.
Well, I don't even develop like the ideas anymore. I just show up and turn on the camera.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. So the operations manager will develop the ID.
The team kind of puts ideas together, and then our student success manager actually steps out of student success for a minute because she's the one that knows piano the best. She's a better pianist than I am by far. Yep. And so she'll kind of do the technical details of what goes in the video from a piano perspective. And then as a team, we'll kind of refine it, and then I'll just put the finishing touch and turn on the camera and record it.
Gotcha. Okay. So in terms of time-wise, how many hours a week would you say you're spending on piano in 21 days? Maybe answer this in two different ways. Maybe answer it as in like, look, this is what I'm spending because I'm thinking of ideas and I'm writing notes and I'm pitching this. And then how much I could if I didn't do any of that. It was just kind of like, I can, whatever.
Yeah. So, I mean, for example, the month in June, me and my family packed up and went to France for the whole month just because we like it over there. And I worked a grand total of, well, I was going to say zero, but I worked for 5 minutes on Piano in 21 Days for the entire month because there was one very small issue with a YouTube thumbnail that they needed me for that I came in for 5 minutes on. So that month I didn't do a Q&A. I took off the weekly team meetings. They did them without me. So it's like speaking of Mike Michalowicz, who wrote Profit First, he also wrote a book called Clockwork. And one of the things he recommends in Clockwork, it's all about, you know, streamlining your time and all that. He says, I forget if it's either 4 weeks or 8 weeks, but he says, if you can't step away from your business for that long, then like, what are you even doing? Like, what's the point of even having a business? Yeah. And so I was able to step away like that. But in general, we're talking like 2 to 4 hours a week, probably for that.
That's awesome. So, all right. Couple follow-up questions with that. Actually, probably just one. What's kind of the plan from here? Is it like, right, that's kind of running itself, I'm just going to keep an eye on it and make sure it stays there? Is it like, all right, now that I'm out of it, I want to focus on the business side of things and come up with strategies and whatnot to grow and take to the next level? Or is it like, great, that's running itself and I'm going to focus more over here? What's sort of the plan from here?
Let's take a quick break.
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
Well, we've got a great team that's helping out over there. I know it's a great product. We've helped a lot of people. And so certainly we want it to continue to be successful and help people, but at the same time, like what I really like doing, I know you like doing this too, is helping people with courses and just talking about like the business side of course businesses. Cause I feel like so many people have these ideas for courses and they're so good at horseback riding or basket weaving, but they're just not good at the funnels and the marketing and the, you know, even how do I even ask somebody for a testimonial, things like that. So I love helping people with that. And that's why I've set things up the way that I can to work a little bit in Piano in 21 Days and spend the, you know, rest of my time on my podcast and working with people in a small group setting. All that to say is having Piano in 21 Days is such a necessary element for my credibility in helping people with courses. Mm-hmm. And so I almost look at it as like my little sandbox over here that I can play with and tinker with. You know, late last year, I ran an experiment in Piano in 21 Days where I wanted to see what would work better as far as urgency goes, urgency and scarcity. Would it work better if I within my evergreen funnel, I made the whole offer go away, meaning the urgency was the availability of the course itself versus a discount going away.
Mm.
All right. So when you talk about an evergreen funnel or a funnel in general, usually there's a deadline of some sort involved. That deadline doesn't have to be going away. With online courses, it usually is the whole thing goes away, a discount goes away, or some kind of bonus goes away, or some combination of that. And so we ran an experiment. We did a split test between availability or discount going away, because I was genuinely curious at what would work better. My audience was curious about it too. And so I was able to share the results. Yeah. I don't know if we've talked about this before. Do you want to take a guess at which one won?
I do want to take a guess. Yes. I think I remember hearing you about that on one of your podcasts. So it was either the whole course went away or the discount went away. They were the two options, right?
Yeah. And just to be clear, like if the discount goes away, that means you can buy the course anytime you want.
Yep.
It's just that within the funnel, you can buy it for a discount and that's what's going away.
Yep.
Versus do you go to the website and it's not available and you can only buy it within the funnel?
Gotcha. I'm going to say it worked better if the whole course went away.
You would be wrong. At least in my one simple experiment, you would be wrong. The discount going away worked 1.5 times better.
There we go. Okay. That's good. Cause I use discounts for my funnel. So I'm happy to hear that.
All the gurus have always said like, don't discount your products. You don't want to show that you're offering a discount. And so I always listen to that advice. And for years, my urgency scarcity was the whole availability going away.
Mm.
And then one day I was like, you know what? I freaking love a good discount, right? Yeah. I'll if something's on discount, like on sale, then my ears are perked up. And so let me just try it, right? Let me set up a good split test and really see which one is going to work better, which one's going to sell better. And it turns out my people loved a good discount too.
I've never tried the going away. The only time I've tried the going away, actually, I've only tried the going away on like a coaching thing, right? Hey, it's a 12-week coaching thing. It starts next week, yada, yada, yada. Never done it on a course. Because to me, like, it didn't make sense logically to me. It's just kind of like, it's an online course. Why would I not sell it? You know, like, it's sitting there doing nothing.
There's an infinite number of copies. What do you mean a digital product is going away?
Yeah, exactly. So it just like didn't make sense to me. And with the discount thing, and this is interesting in the fitness space as well. So like, what I'm trying to say here, I guess, is I think there's a big difference between like a service or a product and a digital product. Because it's kind of like you never, in my opinion, I never want to discount a service. It's like if I charge, you know, X amount per hour or X amount for the coaching thing, I never want to discount that because then I'm making less per hour. But when it's like an online course side of things, I couldn't care less what the individual tag on that course is. It's kind of like, and I have this, because now that I help other, even in fitness education online, we collaborate with other experts in the fitness space and help them create their course under my brand, Fitness Education Online, right? So a lot of the time we're talking about pricing and I'm like, hey, you know, John, we should try a discount on this course. He's like, oh, I don't really want to discount it to that. And I'll just use some rough numbers. Let's just say, you know, his course is $1,000. And I'm like, you know, hey, John, you know, I think we should do a discount and sell it for $500. He's like, oh, I don't really want to discount it that low. And I'm like, all right, we can do it at 1,000, but we'll probably get one sale. Or if we do it at 500, we're going to make 10 sales. It's the same amount of work for you either way. Zero. Would you like $1,000 or would you like $5,000? What would you prefer? Right? If you'd prefer 5,000, we sell it for 500. So I think that's the difference. And it's obviously easier if you've got a bit of an audience because you can sell it in bulk and that sort of thing there. But I think, you know, long-term, yeah, that's my take there. Right. We're coming to the end here, Jack. So I've just got a couple questions I always like to finish with. These next three or four, we'll just do rapid fire. You've answered most of them anyway. And then we'll just do a bit of a close. So one question I always ask is, what's your biggest marketing funnel? You've answered YouTube before. Is that correct? Or is there anything you want to add on there? Is there that you use as well?
So marketing funnel or sales funnel?
Marketing. How do people find out about you originally?
Yeah. For Piano in 21 Days, it is YouTube without a doubt. You know, my second brand is nearly 100% podcast for the Online Course Guy brand, which is, you know, the podcast, like you said, is the online course show. But for Piano in 21 Days, it is YouTube.
Awesome. Can I be sneaky and ask a question for my own selfish reasons? The question, you can answer it or yes or no, is essentially how many downloads per episode for Online Course Guy podcast? Can you answer that one?
Sure. That's roughly 2,000 downloads.
Yeah. Wow.
The podcast.
Okay. So only about 10 times as much as this one. So not a huge, I'm about 200.
Well, look, it gets so much higher, right? I mean, it's the top podcasts, or not even like top business podcasts, get hundreds of thousands of downloads, right? But even a few hundred downloads an episode, you can build a wildly successful business based on a podcast like that. And that's what a lot of people don't understand, is podcasting is one of the highest converting marketing channels you could have, because it's like people get to know you so well. Do you ever get people that are like, that you talk to and they're like, oh my gosh, can't believe I'm actually talking to you. I know so much about you because they've listened to so many episodes of your podcast.
Yeah, man. The funniest is when they bring up old ones, because I batch a lot as well. And they're like, I was listening to your podcast the other week when you said this, this, and this. And I'm like, I said that. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. So we got that there. Okay. In terms of the sales funnel, is it, what kind of sales mechanism do you use? Is it webinar, sales page, phone call?
Oh, webinar, for sure. And I've been experimenting with, so I use what I call an SOD webinar, simple on demand video on a page.
Okay.
Really simple, but I've been experimenting with a newer platform. I don't know if you've heard of it, that I'm really intrigued by, because I'm not a fan of anything that's pretending it's live when it's not live. Right. That was the trend in like 2017, 2018. That was huge.
Yeah.
And then we started seeing this transition to SOD, simple on demand. There's a new platform I'm fascinated by. It's called eWebinar. Have you heard of it?
I haven't, no.
It's very similar to some of these shadier ones, like your EverWebinar types, you know, Stealth Seminar, things like that. But eWebinar, we don't pretend it's live. Mm. It's got a lot of really cool interactive features. There's all kinds of polls, and you can ask people questions. All the while, you know, they understand it's not necessarily live, but what they do as well is they make it really easy to log in on the back end and participate in a live chat if you want mm-hmm. to.
Yep.
And so you can make it clear, like, hey, look, this presentation isn't live, but, you know, me or somebody from my team might be monitoring to the live chat. You know, if you have a question or you want to say anything, give us a shout. And if we're not, you know, if the platform makes it really easy to where if somebody isn't there, it'll just go to your email. And so we've been experimenting with that. And that, I think, has a huge future.
Mm, interesting you say that. That's another one to me that never made sense, the pretending live thing. Like, because I was in the online course space then. I was speaking to a couple of people. They're like, yeah, do this. It looks like you're live. Mm. I'm like, why would I want to do that? You know, like, because I'd been on webinars and they're like, oh, you know, say your name down below. And I'd say my name. And then they'd say, oh, Jax is here. I'm like, why are these people saying me? And then I'd say my name. And I'm like, this isn't live. Why would they right. pretend this live? You know, it just didn't make sense.
The fake chat role is the worst.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was like, are these people actually seeing this? So, okay. And then final question. This will be an interesting one because I know you've changed recently. I think you used, the question is essentially what platform? You know, I think okay. you use two different ones, right?
Yeah, I do. I have two businesses and I use two different ones. That's right.
Yep. What are they?
Are you still a New Zealander?
Yes, I am for Course Creator. I've actually used a combination on Course Creator Community. I use a combination of New Zealander and Thrivecart, actually.
Okay.
And Fitness Education Online, I use your favorite one, Teachable. I know that's your favorite, isn't it, Teachable?
Oof, you're being sarcastic, right? That is the one I do not understand. One day you'll have to explain to me why I use Teachable. It is the worst.
Yeah, I'll tell you why. Tell me yours, and then I'll tell you my situation.
All right. So for Piano in 21 Days, we're on WordPress, which means we're on a lot of different things that are all pieced together, plugins, themes, all kinds of stuff. And it's turned into this really amazing custom thing that my students love. But it's bulky and things do break down and it's expensive. And so we might not be on it long term. We've been on it for a year and a half, 2 years now, something like that. Before that, we were on ClickFunnels. And when I made the change, I highlighted that process of picking a new platform on my podcast a couple of years ago. And I expected, you know, people were very interested to hear what platform I was switching to. And when I switched everything to WordPress, like almost I've got a very loyal following. Like it's not a massive podcast, but like it's a pretty loyal following and they love to hear what I'm using and recommending. Almost nobody followed me over there to the WordPress solution. Like maybe one person, maybe. And so it took me a little while to realize that it's because it wasn't a great solution for most people, yeah. right? Yeah. I used to be an engineer. Like I've got a technical background. I've got a team. I've got, you know, some financial resources to support some of it. Yeah. And so while it's been a pretty good solution for my students and whatnot, for your average course creator, it wasn't a good solution. Yeah. And so I kind of went back to the drawing board. I was like, you know what? I think Kajabi is the best, like overall bang for your buck, like for your average course creator who isn't super technical, who, you know, doesn't want to spend a ton of money. I was like, I think Kajabi is the way to go because it does so much so well in one platform.
Mm.
And so what I did was I built my second brand on Kajabi about 6 months ago. So right now I've got onlinecourseguy.com website, podcast, you know, courses, memberships, funnels, everything is in Kajabi. And then Piano in 21 Days is on WordPress. Might move Piano in 21 Days to Kajabi. That's how much I've liked it so far.
Mm, okay. I'll give you my take on both of my ones here. So first ever course was an ebook for me, right? Oh, we're going back to Fitness Education Online.
Yeah. I remember the story, document.
Right? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. Right. It was the ebook. And then I hired a business coach and they got me on ClickFunnels and ActiveCampaign and Samcart. So I had all this software, right? I had, cause I didn't know any different, you know? So ClickFunnels, Samcart, ActiveCampaign was still selling my ebook, right? And then, you know, a couple months in, I learned a bit more about ClickFunnels, and I'm like, hold on, I can hold a course on ClickFunnels as well. Why am I selling this ebook? It was an ebook with like embedded YouTube or like inserted YouTube videos. I'm like, let me just put those videos on ClickFunnels and, you know, way better. Did that. The down point at the time, and I think you agree with this as well, ClickFunnels is amazing at funnels, but wasn't amazing for the course experience, especially for me who has multiple courses. The biggest down point I found was every new course had to be a new login. So people would buy my Bootcamp Level 1 and Level 2. Oh, great. Here's my login created on Bootcamp Level 1. Then they're trying to log in for Bootcamp Level 2. They couldn't find it because it's a new link, yada, yada, yada. Need to send another email. It was just really complicated. And then I was like, hold on, maybe I can get someone to build it on my website. So I got someone online, I think Fiverr or whatever, and they were like, yeah, yeah, we can build this on your website, no dramas. Can't remember what plugin this was. This is 2014, 2015. But, you know, they built it on WordPress. And that was good because people would just go to the website and log in. The limitation I found with that is a couple of times my website crashed, probably because I, you know, paid someone $5 on Fiverr to, you know, create my business on there. But either way, that got me thinking where I was like, hold on. The down point with the website crashing was twofold. It's like now people can't log in and do their course. So I'm getting emails and complaints and that sort of thing. But also I can't make new sales because people can't go on there and buy my course as well. So I was like, at least if I go onto a different platform, you know, people, and one of them goes down, you know, Teachable was down last week or whatever. Great. People can still buy courses. Or if, you know, my website goes down, okay, great. At least people can log in. I felt there was a bit more leverage there. The reason I picked Teachable, it was early days. This was, I don't know, 2015 or something. I just didn't care to look into it enough. And it wasn't, the online course space wasn't as big it is now. There aren't as many options. They weren't as out there. So I just went with Teachable. The reason I'm still on there is there's just like, I've just got too many courses. I got courses, free courses, mini courses. Like to change would be a nightmare. And then on top of that, like I use even a different software, but let's just say I use ClickFunnels for my landing page. I use ActiveCampaign for the email, and I use Teachable for hosting the courses, and I use Samcart to buy the courses, right? So don't recommend that for anyone. That's probably what not to do, but and I've got some of them, they've got subscriptions on there, so it's not even worth me canceling because I got people paying. So that's just in there because it's kind of easy and to do like that. When I started the course creator community, I knew that wasn't the best option. So I was like, all right, let me check out the different things. I started on Teachable and I was like, nah, this just, it doesn't like, it was too limiting. The down point I found with Teachable and I find with Teachable is it's very limiting on like the funnel side of things. You know, the registration page, a sales page, like that was a nightmare. I tried to do it on Teachable. I'm like, nah, I can't really do this. Let me find something else. And there were a lot of murmurs about New Zenler. And I was like, okay, you know, let me try this New Zenler thing because it was even more affordable back then. Now I think it's about $67 a month. I got on at about $47 a month. And I tried it and I'm like, you know what? I don't think, and I tried Kajabi as well. And I'll tell you, Kajabi is way better than New Zenler. No comparison, right? However, I was like, all right, but at these price points, this is $47 a month for everything. This is 90 at the time. I don't know what it is. I think they've got a new 3-month deal and there's things changing. But at that time anyway, I think the minimum was 97, but it was 3 courses, 3 funnels or whatever. Once again, someone like me who's got courses, mini courses, I was like, if someone's got, and I actually asked your opinion on this, Jacques. If someone has multiple courses, say like 10 courses, right? And not all paid courses, say they've got, not even 10, say a little bit more than the minimum that Kajabi allows. So say 4 or 5 courses, say half a free, half a paid. They've got a level 1, a level 2, another course, and I don't know, 3 free mini courses. I think that price is around $300, $200, $300. Do you know?
On Kajabi?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's the basic plan is $150 a month. That's the minimum you can pay is $150 a month of Kajabi, and you only get 3 products.
Yeah.
And then you'd have to go to $200 a month to get 15 products.
Yeah. So I'm just like, well, if you've got more than 200, I don't think many course creators will do that. That was my thinking there. I'm like, whereas I think at 47, most people will. So I'm going to build my thing on there, even though because course creator is kind of like a side thing for me. So I was like, I'm going to build my thing on there so I know the experience, because I don't want to recommend something that I've never used. I don't want to say, yeah, you could go Kajabi, it's great, but if you don't have the cash, go on New Zenla that I've never used, you know? So that's why I started using New Zenla there. And this is even what I'd recommend. This is my recommendation for brand new course creators. I would still say, look, start with New Zenla if you're tight on cash, $47 a month there. I would then even recommend, before too long, I would recommend going to ActiveCampaign for email. So New Zenla's got a good basic email, but I'd recommend going to ActiveCampaign. My reasoning for that, I don't know what it's like at Kajabi, but at New Zenla, you can't kind of like really filter the list out, right? You can't really say, oh, if someone hasn't opened for three, like in ActiveCampaign, I got like, all right, if someone doesn't open in 3 months or in 1 month, they get this tag and they'll get these emails. You know, if someone doesn't open in 2 months, they get this tag and this email, and then you know, they automatically get removed from there. I don't think you can do that on New Zenla, or it's pretty tricky. So that's where I'd bring in ActiveCampaign. And then I also recommend after that Thrivecart, because the down point with New Zenla is the checkout cart, right? So let's say most people that I sell to on the course creator community have got some free course with me already, right? So they've already got an account with New Zenla that they've probably forgotten about or used 6 months ago or a year ago, right? If they want to buy one of my courses, they need to log in on New Zenla and other platforms as well. Thinkific's the same, I know. The user needs to log in first and then buy. That's a friction point that I don't want. You know, someone goes in there, oh, I forgot my password, oh, I'll do it later, never goes there. So that's why I think, yeah, that there. And then at that point there, say with me now, course creator community, I'm only really using New Zenla for the actual like funnel component of it. And then, yeah, I'll simplify. I'm mainly just using it for the funnel component there. But that's when I found the limitations. The email was... it's perfect to start for someone, but if you want to do serious email marketing, it's not going to cut it. And also the checkout cart isn't amazing. I think sooner or later, as a course creator, you're going to want to use something that someone can buy without logging in. I'd love to get your take on that. And then I know we're a bit short on time, so I'd love just to get your take on that, and then we'll finish up.
Well, this is just like we're totally just geeking out on course creator stuff. There's not much I enjoy more than this, Jono. But I mean, you made some really good points. I think that one of the downsides to Kajabi is the accessibility to those just starting out, because its minimum plan is $150 a month.
Yeah,
and if you're not making any money, like that's a good amount to pay. And so your Teachables and your Thinkific have lower tiers you can start at and work your way up. So I agree that's kind of a downfall. So I do like the all-in-one component, because most people are not super tech whizzes.
Yeah.
And so if somebody doesn't want to bite the bullet on Kajabi, then I will say, hey, well, look, check out New Zenla or Podia. Mm. Those are a couple of other all-in-ones that are a little more budget friendly. But what really drives me crazy is when you get people that are, and this is no offense to you, because I know you've been around for a long time, and sometimes you just don't want to migrate. But I've got people coming to me and they're like, all right, I'm on Teachable for my courses. Yeah. I've got ClickFunnels for my funnels.
Yeah.
I'm paying $100 a month for website hosting. Yeah. I've got my podcast over here that I'm paying $15 a month. Yeah. You know, I'm using ConvertKit for emails, and they're paying like $400 bucks a month for all these packages when they could be paying $150 a month for Kajabi.
Yep.
And most of the things would work better, and it'd all be in one place. And people just don't realize that's even an option. And so that's when I'm like, man, Kajabi would be such a better fit for that type of person.
Yeah, I agree with that. My take on that, I'll be 2 minutes, then we'll finish up. So let me think of how to explain this on that. So I think there's kind of levels, right? I think I think starting off, I'd go all in 100%, right? And that's why I kind of like New Zenla, because it's like good price and got everything you need to start. You know, that's why I think that's such a good one there. Kajabi's better, hands down better, but you're paying an extra $100 a month or whatever, you know. Do you need that extra $100 more at this stage here? The limitation to that, in my opinion, is it only get you so far with those two things that I found, you know, the email and on the course creator side of things. The fitness education is just a mess. It's just too hard to change. I'm not changing it now, like whatever, you know. But I'm saying if I was to start new again, brand new, if I had money, I would go Kajabi. If money was no dramas to me, you know, yeah, I'd go Kajabi. If I didn't, I'd go Zenla, but I'd know that it would only take me to a certain point, you know, then I would still want to look at you know, maybe a Thrive card or an active campaign. But I'm with you on the side of like, if someone's like, no, I'm going to go the Teachable free plan because it's free, you know, and then I'm going to go, you know, the MailChimp free plan because it's free. And then I'm going to go Zapier free plan there. And it just, it's, I think that's what I did when I started, actually. I just wanted all these free ones or cheap ones. But before long, now I want more courses, or I got to, now I want subscriptions. So I got to pay more there. And now I've got a bigger email list. So I got to pay there. And now I've got more Zaps. So I got to pay there. Like, chunks, I was paying, I think, about 1,000. I cleaned it up a bit because I was paying, what was ClickFunnels? That's got to be 300 a month.
Yeah, they have their popular plan is $297 a month or something like that.
Active campaign, I was, you know, about the same, you know, $200-$300 a month. Samcart, you know, $100 a month. Zapier, a couple hundred bucks a month there. What am I missing? Either way, a Teachable, you know, another $100 there. Like at one stage, I was paying about 1,000. Yeah, yeah. But hey, I know we're a bit short on time. Jux, anything you want to finish us off with?
Well, in closing, I would say, you know, this was a really fun discussion about software, but the platform somebody picks, while we're both very passionate about this, the importance of it pales in comparison to like nailing your ideal customer and what their dream outcome is and what funnel and the details of your funnel you're using and your marketing channels and the consistency behind that and how good your course is and all of these other things are so much more important than what software you use. Yeah. And so I just wanted to be clear on that before we wrapped up. Yeah, and I'm sure you'll agree with me on that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not like I hope the message there wasn't someone listening being like, oh, I'm on Uzendla. That's why I'm not making sales. Let me switch over to Kajabi and I'll magically make sales. Like they're just, you know, refinements on there. Yeah. Exactly. Awesome. All right, Jux, I'll leave you to it.
Thanks, Jono. Always a pleasure.
Hey, course creators, real quick before we get into today's episode, I've got a little favor to ask. As a lot of you are probably aware, one of my goals for this year is to get this, is to massively grow this podcast and get it to be one of the top ranking podcasts in the marketing space. To do that, what really helps is if I can generate as many ratings as reviews as possible from listeners. So if you're a returning listener, if you could take a couple seconds and just give me a quick rating and review on Apple or Spotify or whatever platform you listen to, that would mean the world to me. Anyway, let's get to today's show.